John!
What?
Red 7!
I don't know what Red 7 means.
Hot route!
I don't. What is hot route?
Will you just go stand on the other side, please?
Down!
Come on!
Ready! Down! Set! Hut! 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 Hut!
Hit me! Booyah! That's what we call a sack lunch! Nom 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 nom!
It's time for the Soonerscoop.com postgame show presented by Eskridge Lexus in Oklahoma City. Eskridge Lexus is the official travel partner of Soonerscoop.com podcasts. Now, here's your road crew, Carrie, Eddie, and Bob, wrapping up all the action and reaction from this week's game.
Under our belts, the Sooners beat Kent State 33-3 in the first night game on Owen Field with the LED lights, and it wasn't pretty until the halftime speech from Jeff Lebby and Brent Venables woke this team up, well, especially the offense up. They score 24 points in the third quarter and find some big-time playmakers, Marvin Mims. You can add Drake Stoops into there. You can add Eric Gray into there. But even Marcus Major had some really eye-popping moments. And this offense, Dylan Gabriel kind of figured it out. The defense was solid throughout, 14 tackles for a loss, less than 300 yards total offense given up by Kent State. And Sooners are 2-0 moving on a crazy Saturday of college football.
But, man, it was ugly for the until the last series of the first half. It was just, I think a lot of people were going, what is happening?
After the first two series, my first, and look, I should preface this by saying Twitter's insane.
Right.
And you get a lot of people just throwing
tantrums. The
natives
were restless even in the stadium, though.
Down, like you felt
yeah.
it? Like,
oh, yeah. But there were murmurs.
After two, well, they're used to the Spencer. They don't realize they don't have a Caleb Williams sitting on the bench.
But especially when Kent State starts moving the ball there before, you know, OU starts calling the timeouts right before halftime. And it's like, okay, like, first off, it almost kind of surprised me that
break the seal on the scoring.
But then I'd look up and I go, oh my God, there's 5 minutes left in the first half. And OU's down 3-0 to Kent State. But, like, I mean, like they said during the post game, something sparked there on that final drive.
It was ugly for a while.
It was almost kind of, somebody pointed out on Twitter that it was almost kind of reminiscent of exactly what Baylor did in 2014, where it was just like, you guys are going to play back. We're just going to pick you down right down the field over on that same sideline, too, over on the west side.
Yeah.
And, you know, they got Marvin Mims. It seemed like they found a rhythm. And then obviously they hit him over the top with the big one, and the rest was history. There was a lot of good, but, you know, again,
I will say this. I mean, to me, my problem watching it from the press box is just the offensive line was not very good.
They're just not. I mean, it's just not. They're great not right now.
They're not. Playing at a championship level or even close to it.
They had 7 yards rushing.
I know.
With
at halftime,
like yeah,
it was zero for the longest time. I mean, they did not run the ball, and it was almost like Kent State was playing an odd front, and they had trouble matching up with it. Like, people were passing guys off to other guys, and then they weren't picking them up, and it was just awkward. It was like it was one of those things. It's like, boy, these guys really don't get it. And then Dylan Gabriel didn't have time, or I think what we saw also is kind of what goes back to last year. Receivers could not get open.
Sure.
Like, troubling rate.
It seemed like a couple times he had plenty of time and just held on to the ball. I don't know if he didn't want to take any shots down the field, but once everything started going, it was amazing how efficient everything was offensively.
Right. The bad thing is...
is one game last going to save this whole entire offensive line? Like, seriously, like, that's to the point, I think, where the fans right now, and especially people on the board, it's like, okay, we'll see. They've said that people are playing out of position. Does Wanya Morris solve everything when they go to Lincoln next week? And Brent Venables did say after the game, I don't know, it kind of seemed like they expected
that.
He
gave hints that, like, yeah, the expectations are that he will be back. And he's been practicing, so it's not like he's just been sitting around and he's got all this rust that's built up.
Yeah, he's been practicing. Yeah. He just can't come to the games.
So, I don't know. I mean, it's probably not as simple as that. I mean, certainly... McCade Mattire has, you know, had some ups and downs.
Yeah.
Chris Murray seems to be solid. but it there's nothing like the dominating.
Right, it doesn't seem like the right side of the offensive line is that big of a problem between Chris Murray and Anton Harrison.
The left side tonight, the, yeah.
Yeah.
Because I look at it differently. You're right, yeah.
I don't know, though, man. It just seems like they're getting no push up front,
no,
especially
I agree.
Early.
I agree.
And, I mean, it's kind of like what we talked about during the postgame show last week. I like Eric Gray. I think he still has a role in this offense, but...
The feature back? No.
The feature back is starting... Like, although, feels I will like say that's this, starting though. To turn.
They gave Javonte Barnes more chances tonight, and he looked very average. I mean, he ran tough, but... It's not like he was picking the perfect. I mean, it's not like there were a bunch of holes there that he found that the other running backs weren't fine. I mean, all of Eric Gray and Marcus Major's damage came on the edges tonight.
If you want to talk about a tough runner, and I know that it was kind of mop up time, but
I know where are you going,
Tawie Walker, man. I know. He's just a little bowling ball.
It could be interesting. I mean,
Marcus Major looked good though.
He did.
Like the touchdown run when he breaks it outside, that looks smooth.
I hate to say this, but and it's the number, but he's so Nick Chubbish to me. Like he's not
Major?
Nick Chubb, yeah.
Yeah.
But he gives me a little Nick Chubb feel.
Well, he has a good feel for it seemed like, and I don't know if like DeMarco was chewing his ass after the touchdown.
I think he was, yeah.
For like the little high step.
Yes.
But he's like just get up field.
Yes.
But it was a very
we noticed that up in the press box.
It was a very let's just say DeMarco was very firm with his words, it looked like on the sidelines as he met him off the
just get into
the
end zone. Don't celebrate until you get in the end zone.
It's one of those things. 33-3. It's a solid victory, but nothing else. I don't feel differently about this team.
I think it is something else. I mean, I think you've got a team that struggled in the first half and figured out a way to put it together. To me, that means something.
Sure.
To me, the connection with Marvin Mims, I mean, let's not pretend like Dylan Gabriel and Marvin Mims have been on a football field in a game that matters before.
Yeah, no doubt.
And I'm not saying that this was like, you know, the Red River rivalry, but those two basically picked up this offense on their own and said, we're going to wheel this thing forward.
Sure.
And then you get the contributions from Gray and Major and Drake Stoops and Theo Weiss has a little bit here and there. I mean, a lot of guys got targeted tonight, and Daniel Parker.
Daniel Parker
he did some really good stuff.
He had, what did he have, 5 catches at Missouri, and he had 2 on one drive tonight? And, you know,
he looks like a guy that never gets to carry the football and wants to prove to everybody that he's a dice.
He just, like, wraps it up.
He's like, you're not only going to not tackle me, but I'm going to carry about 4 of you with me.
Braden Willis had, you know, the drop. He walks into the end zone if he gets that.
Yeah.
The ball to Jaden Gibson... He walks into the end zone. That was actually a really good play by the Kent State defensive back.
The one that he kind of threw on a rope.
That was a hell of a play.
That was a great pass breakup. Yeah.
Are we just conditioned to start offensively? Because I guess, you know, the story tonight I thought was a really strong defensively, even though there were some lapses, you know, occasionally tonight, and you go, oh, yeah, that was the team that missed tackles a year ago. That was the guy that missed some action.
To me, the story of the game is, and it's probably not fair to highlight him because a lot of people did good things, but I'm starting to see Danny Stutzman become a stud.
Man. Yeah. It's like I think everybody expected him to make that jump under Brent Venables, but some of the plays he made tonight, particularly the play on the fourth down stop, the plays that he would make behind the line of scrimmage, it's like he's starting to see things a little bit. And I talked to him a little bit about after the game about it. And it's like, yeah, the game's starting to slow down to me. And that's good news considering he's only technically started 8 quarters in his OU career. But, I mean, that's starting to become a guy that's like, that's a Buckus type linebacker. Like the first time in a long time that you can say that is a guy that you can build this defense around. And same thing for Billy Bowman.
I mean, I see more instincts out of him than I ever did Kenneth Murray in this entire career.
Yeah, he's starting to read things and he's meeting people behind the line of scrimmage, which, you know, Kenneth Murray, obviously, he made plenty of
Danny
CFLs
Stutzman had 4
career,
tackles for losses tonight, 4.
And he had 12, he led the team in tackles, 12
tackles.
12
tackles, yeah, and he had a sack.
Dude, the guy's, I mean, he's actually emerging and developing under, you know, in front of us.
And give it up to Justin Broyles, 11 tackles on the night.
Yeah, like we've given him a lot of shit before, but
Key Lawrence
he played
was
well.
Out. You were down there on the field. I was up there watching him at the press box. Like, at the end of workouts, like, he's wearing his bucket hat and, yeah, and just street clothes. But he was literally jogging across the field. So I don't know that it could be anything that serious.
Brent shed light on it after the game. Basically said he tweaked his hamstring. And, you know, I think that's a deal that he's going to be playing next week when they go to Lincoln for the first time.
But I mean, Key Lawrence in the lineup. That's a drop off. I mean, Broyles played great tonight.
Yeah, Justin played well.
And Billy Bowman, a forced fumble and recovery all in one.
Yep,
that was impressive.
They did, you know, and I hate to sit here and pick on the guy, but you know, you get on Twitter, you get into text groups during the game, and it seemed like, you know. And to a certain extent, Deshaun White's kind of become that whipping boy that everybody likes to say, like, he's out of position, he's missing. Was it as bad as people are making it out to be?
No, I don't think so. I didn't see any. Here's the thing about this defense. I don't. There may be a whiff tackle here and there every once in a while, but those guys run to the football. And those guys, when a running back comes through the hole, it's very rare that they don't just stand him up and push him back. Like, well, there's not a whole lot of that, like, scrum that develops, like enough OU defenders descend on a running back to make to get it to the point where a scrum never has a chance to start. So there's never a guy running for 3 yards that keeps pushing the pile to be 4 and 5 and 6 and 7. Like, that's what's impressed me as much as anything. That never has a chance to develop with this defense because everybody flies to the football.
There was a couple times it looks like they were almost too fast for the football. Like on the safety when they get bailed out because he steps out of bounds, they just over-pursued him and let him out. I mean, they had 4 or 5 guys in the end zone back there, and somehow the quarterback gets out, although he stepped out of bounds.
He was so scared shitless he didn't even know where he was on the field.
But again, it's second game. It feels like another positive. I didn't realize that was the least amount of points that Oklahoma had allowed to an FBS opponent since 2017 until Brent said something after the game.
Yeah,
it makes sense. I mean, they've allowed 13 points in 8 quarters.
I mean, the only negative about tonight were the third down conversions that Kent State was able to get. And I mean, you don't want to see that because we've seen too much of that over the years. But at the same time, 3 points.
Less than
300 yards total.
3 points, less than 300 yards. And
the thing I like about this defense, in the 2 games they've shown us, they'll bring in backups and they don't give up points.
That's the biggest thing for me. And especially
let people back into a game.
Right, right. Oh, I think that, you know, and I hate to just continually compare everything to last year, but that's a game that might be closer in the third quarter with a different set. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, Kent State was in the ball game. No doubt about it. But they kind of put their, you know, it's kind of like everything that was said during
you're
in the
saying
red
if last year's
game.
Defense was around.
Yeah. Like, yeah. I think that Kent State's able to move the ball a little bit more, or at least capitalize when they were able to move the ball. What'd they end up on third down tonight? I'm looking right now.
They, see, I know what OU was.
Third down, 6 of 16. OU was 3 for 12.
Yeah.
Like, that's not great.
It was 6 of 11, so they went 0 for 5 to finish the game.
But still, I mean, it was another positive step. They've allowed 13 points in, what, 8 quarters now to start the year. It's obvious that this defense is playing better than they were a year ago.
What's interesting is they've played 2 pretty mobile quarterbacks with good arms.
Yeah.
And they're going to play another mobile quarterback who throws the ball well against Nebraska.
Sure.
And then they're going to play Adrian Martinez. Like, this defense is going to be well-versed in mobile quarterbacks.
K-State beat the shit out of Missouri today. I don't think Missouri's any good.
Yeah.
But that's going to be a big boy football game in 2 weeks. Now, obviously, you got to get through the first road trip and the experience of Lincoln. And those fine folks had a fun day in Nebraska today.
I mean, it was a great day of football.
Oh, it was awesome.
I mean, A&M loses.
And it just broke my heart to see that.
How did you handle Texas-Nebraska or Texas-Alabama?
I was here watching it with the fam. They came by the office, and it was like, I don't really know, like,
how to
handle this. Like, it's kind of the I thought Texas played well. I thought Alabama played awful for, you know, basically 3 quarters.
And then the Heisman Trophy winner showed up.
Yeah, Bryce Young was amazing when they really needed him. Will Anderson comes up with the sack to force the field goal. But even like when Alabama gets the ball back with 1:30 left or whatever it was, it was like, you just kind of felt like Bryce Young was going to lead him down the field. I didn't think that he was going to make the play that he did.
Overriding thing that I take from that game is Texas is good on defense, man.
Yeah, Texas looks good. They more than anything, they look competent.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, from where that thing was a year ago, it's obviously kind of like Oklahoma, a step in the right direction. They just didn't make enough plays to win the game.
We know how that goes. You know, they lose Quinn Ewers. Hudson Card comes in. He's banged up. Like,
that was probably the most surprising part is after Quinn Ewers got hurt, Alabama just seemed like was never able to take advantage, and credit to Texas defensively.
But I just wonder, what way does this go? Like, does it now
become a thing
where the offense regresses?
Sure.
The defense gets tired of, you know, trying to hold it together, and they become kind of a mediocre team.
I think that's the biggest question right now with Texas is what they do next week against UTSA. And it's weird to say.
And the biggest question is, when does Quinn Ewers come back? Because
I wouldn't imagine
they're not a Big 12. They're not a Big 12 championship type team unless they have Quinn Ewers.
Probably not. Quinn Ewers looked good.
Yeah, he looked really good.
He looked pretty good.
And he's not like he doesn't have like a rocket arm. But he's so accurate, and his deep ball is amazingly good.
He looked good.
I'm just saying, Arch Manning might start checking your options.
And the thing about it too is it just like
arching on? By
it's
way.
Always it's Hashtag. Always in the back of my mind. It's like, is this good? How good is this going to be for Texas recruiting? Like, they're going to be able to sell that they, you know, went toe to toe with Alabama. But again, they're going to have to go out there and, like, how do they handle success, because this is a program that hasn't had that much success.
The troubling thing for that Alabama team today is Texas has two receivers, and that's more than Alabama has.
Yeah, they struggled.
I mean, Xavier Worthy is something that Alabama doesn't. Like, if Alabama had Xavier Worthy, they're like they were last year. But Texas has him. And then it's Whittingham, right? That was hurt last year, and now he's back. He played really well today. But other than Gibbs, I mean, what other explosive players did you see Alabama throw out there? I mean, Jace McClellan had a great run.
But, like, when that happened and they go up, what was it, 10-3 at the time, I thought to myself, like, oh, boy.
Here's the slow march to death. Yeah.
And then it just never came around. It never came around. Like, somebody had tweeted during the middle of the third quarter, Quinn Ewers was still the leading passer of the game.
Hudson Card finally overtook him, and I think Bryce Young did too. But I think today what Texas did is they sent a message. And it's it's not an off-season message like beating Georgia in the Sugar Bowl.
Yeah.
This is a real message. This is the most real message that Texas has sent anyone.
No, they played well enough to win the game. I mean, they truly
did.
They
could have, if not for one play by Bryce Young.
I tweeted it during the game, but there is something like beautiful about college athletics and college football specifically when a team is told that they can't be on the same field as somebody for 7 months and then all of a sudden they play, I don't want to say the game of their lives, but they play extremely well. They played extremely focused. I did hear that Gary Patterson has been doing two things during his time in Austin.
Game planning for Alabama.
Game planning for Alabama. And game planning for Oklahoma.
But, I mean, I give it up to Steve Sarkisian, though, too. Yeah. I mean, he came out with all kinds of shit to throw at Alabama.
I'm sure that there's stuff, like, when you work in that Saban tree that, like, you pick up and you're like, I'm going to save this for one day. I'm going to play this bitch.
Do you think, like, other, what do they call the place? The coach's graveyard or whatever. Like, do you think other coaches that have been in that, like Butch Jones, like, they were secretly helping him during the offseason? Like, that Kirby Smart was sending
him stuff?
I think
you either hate him or you love him. I don't know where Sark falls in that.
Kirby probably wouldn't help him because he's the only coach to beat him other than Jimbo.
Yeah, probably so. I could see
Jimbo, like, sending Sarkisian, hey, try this.
How's Jadavian Sanders only have 3 receptions for 4 yards?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I did see Drew Sanders sack Spencer Rattler today.
Yeah, that was I love Shane Beamer, but that operation doesn't look very clean right now.
They didn't embarrass themselves.
No,
but
they didn't.
They were never in that game.
No, and I saw one of the throws that Rattler had that got picked off in the end zone.
Yeah,
it was the most Spencer Rattler
to Austin
throw.
Stogner. Like, if you would have just thrown it here,
he threw it into triple coverage.
Yeah.
Like,
it's 6'7" Austin Stogner. Give him a chance.
At some point, you got to learn, and it doesn't seem like Spencer Rattler, from what I've seen. I haven't sat around and watched a lot of it.
He looks like a guy that can't read coverages or can't read a field in front of him. He does not have the ability to see someone coming open.
And it doesn't get any easier because they got Georgia coming to town next week.
Oh, man.
But no.
Wait, I thought Kent State plays Georgia.
Kent State plays Long Island.
Oh, nice for them.
And then they go down to Athens in 2 weeks. So I think it's their home opener. They'll be back home for the first time in what, like 13 days, Kent State? Because they stayed up in Tulsa all week?
They didn't have a water problem at their place, did they?
Where?
Was that Jackson State?
Oh, yeah. Dion's that was down in Mississippi.
Yeah,
that was down in Mississippi. Kent State is a nice ball club. They'll compete in MAC.
What was it, 55-21 Washington?
Something like that, yeah. And they turned the ball over three times. Yeah. Like, and I think Washington turned all three of those turnovers into touchdowns.
And one was the first play of the game.
Yeah. We were sitting out in the office when that happened. So, I don't know. I mean, you know, just kind of getting back to the Oklahoma stuff, I thought that, unless we want to make fun of Jimbo for a while, we could do that. But, you know,
By the way, real quick. I mean, I can only imagine what the NIL brotherhood at A&M is thinking tonight.
I mean, they're spending...
As they go back to their mansions.
They're not exactly getting a lot of ROI right now.
No. But that's the thing, like, can this get for A&M? Are they 8-4?
I don't think Haynes King's very good.
No, he's not.
I just don't think he's a very good quarterback. And I would love to get Josh's thoughts, and we will on the unofficial 40 this week, but it just seems like he's not going to develop very much under Jimbo.
I mean, what quarterback has?
Jameis Winston, and Jameis Winston's a great athlete. Like, he's a good quarterback.
He's an idiot savant.
Yeah, like, I mean, the guy can throw the shit out of the football.
And that's it.
Yeah. Let's see what New Orleans does this year with him. Michael Thomas, Chris Olave.
But anyway, back to OU.
No, the two guys that I thought came in the secondary that played pretty well tonight, Damon Harmon.
Mm-hmm.
It's good to see him starting to play a little bit more.
Damon Harmon was fourth on the team in tackles. Let me think. 1, 2, 3, 4. Yeah, fourth.
Josh put it a great way in the report card on the board. It looks like he's starting to force himself onto the field. Like, you just got to keep him out there at some point.
And I thought going into the season, like, he was that guy that, like, okay, he's just going to be a washout.
Yeah. I just never really knew what he was going to be.
Nah.
And the other guy, I mean, it's pretty obvious. Justin Harrington's getting more and more comfortable out there.
Yes.
How do they get him on the field more, though? Like, I just...
It was interesting that Ted Roof was like, whatever you want to call him tonight. Like, they're still not settled on exactly what he is to this defense.
I just put him at the nickel or the cheetah or whatever you want to call it. Like, it seems like that's a fit. He can cut. The one play that I could see why they are hesitant was he broke on a play behind the line of scrimmage and just completely whiffed, playing it like almost closer inside.
Yeah.
But outside, like the pick, when was the last time you saw a guy make a beat on the ball like he did? Or at least from what I could tell, the ball might have been thrown right to him.
I think I was coming down when this happened.
But it was a nice play. It just looks like he's starting to become more and more comfortable. And, you know, I think that...
Look, I don't have a problem with anybody in the secondary tonight. I mean...
No, Jayden Davis.
DJ Graham got a lot of playing time tonight. I think we've kind of ignored that.
Yeah.
And it doesn't seem like they're displeased with Jayden Davis. They just gave DJ Graham a lot of time tonight. And he was out there with the starters a lot of the time.
Yeah. I thought Woody played well. I mean, but we're talking about guys that you don't necessarily see because they're not getting burnt deep. They're not letting
Woody
guys
buy them. Tested a couple times early, and then they just they were like, okay, we can't get that guy.
And, you know, maybe it's PTSD, but they would have given up a couple big plays the defense last year.
Mm-hmm.
And they still haven't done that through eight quarters. They haven't given up like that.
They've had like some 30 plus like they gave up that play. Third and long on the sideline where the guy
it was a great play.
Yeah, the quarterback threw the sidearm and the guy tiptoed it in.
Yeah, like at some point you just got to go, that's a hell of a play.
Yeah,
congrats. But they were able to find answers when they needed to today. And like you said at the beginning, I just want to continue watching Danny Stutzman. Like, the guy is, I mean, that's the linebacker I think that everybody is kind of sort of wanted for a while at Oklahoma.
I saw former stud linebacker at Oklahoma back he was the next Brian Bosworth, Dante Jones.
Oh, really?
Danny Stutzman was saying something about buying those stupid, you know, $140 jerseys with his name on it, and Dante Jones answered him, and he said, like, I'll buy one when you get join the All-American Club, because Dante was an All-American. And then all the stuff came about how the players were only making, like, $4 off of that. But it is interesting, like, guys like Dante Jones, like, he's a real, like, he's not going to be messing around with it. And he said, I predicted him to be the next great linebacker a year ago.
Yeah.
So, like, linebackers are recognizing Danny Stutzman.
It just seems like he's reacting, like you said, he's reacting to stuff and he's seeing stuff so well right now. And he talked about this, with Ryan Abrams asking him after the game about it. It's like, Brent, when he came in, he basically sat Danny down and was like, are you willing to make sacrifices to be one of the best linebackers in the country? And he really had to, like, sit down and, like, kind of look himself in the mirror and say, like, there's some things that I need to cut out of my life and get my ass into this film room and basically kind of grind it out almost. And I think that, like, Brent's, obviously, he's always going to be hard on him. I thought it was really funny after the fourth down stop. You know, it's a great moment. They've come up with this big stop, and Brent Venables is the first one to meet Danny Stutzman. And instead of, like, slapping him on the ass, he's, like, chewing his ass out about something.
And yeah, probably like, why aren't you doing this? Why aren't you doing that?
Plays before.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that it certainly takes a certain type of person to want to be coached like that. And just from getting to know, like, Steve Stutzman and, like, kind of Danny kind of a little bit, it feels like they love that idea. Like, they're football guys. They love that kind of stuff.
I've got a really good Danny Stutzman merch idea. I don't know. I imagine your dad probably definitely read the article in Sports Illustrated about Brian Bosworth. And there's a really famous picture in there where he's leaning up against a white Corvette. And he said, I think the story was something like he used to work in a GM factory. And what they would do is they would, like, hang these bolts by a string inside the doors of the Corvette to drive people insane, wondering what that noise was. These are messed up people. But, like, so there's a picture of him, like, out in front of, like, an oil derrick.
I've definitely seen the picture before.
Like, if you looked at Brian Bosworth white Corvette,
I'm familiar with the picture.
But
I don't think I've ever read the article, though.
I told Wallace Marsh, who produced the 30 for 30 for Bosworth.
Yeah.
Like, I want to recreate that photo with Danny Stutzman if he becomes really good.
Oh, I'm sure that he would. I'm sure that he would love that.
That would be a great... Like, I want to bring posters back. Like, kids buying posters on their wall like they used to with NBA players. Like, Michael Jordan with his tongue out.
So we're just completely going to... push NFTs to the side. Like
NFTs. We're done with NFTs. Doing posters.
Yeah, I like that.
Posters, like, used to go to Walmart and they had this bin, and this is like, it goes all the way back to, like, Farrah Fawcett. And, well, I mean, it goes all the way back to Shawshank Redemption when the guy broke out of his cell. We need to bring posters back.
I need to ask Toby if, like, I would imagine there's nobody more happy about Danny Stutzman than Teddy.
Yeah, Lane. Yeah.
I bet, like, that OU
just
radio
makes
booth
his
is just
heart
like,
just melt.
Yes, absolutely.
Although he's probably a little bit like Brent, like, well, he could have done this better.
I'm sure he is. I'm sure he is. But that's a good thing. Like, that's where this defense needs to continue to be. I thought Isaiah Coe played pretty well, making his first start of the year.
He played well,
and it seems like Jalen Redmond's starting to kind of come along.
He is. He had. I want to say he was in the tackle for loss category. It might have been just one, but it was a good one. He had two and a half tackles for loss.
Down in the south end zone was the really good one.
Yeah.
I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
He I think as they were putting in that 31 at running back, the kind of the big guy that Bradford, I think his name was. Mm-hmm. And he just stuffed him one time.
He only had two tackles, but I felt like Jeffrey Johnson was around the football quite a bit tonight too.
Yeah. And You know, they get a lot of rotation from those guys.
I was surprised. Like, it almost kind of reminded me of last year, like, in a bad way, I guess, how they were, like, they were line changing almost at points.
Yeah, yeah.
But they were able to get away with it, and they want to get guys snaps. And, you know, overall, again, it was a pretty positive night. It's really hard for me to sit here and bitch, but, man, that first and second quarter were just a drag.
Yeah, but it's the second game of the era.
Yeah,
100%. New systems on both sides of the ball.
Well, and it just shows how spoiled everybody is.
Billy Bowman had a great return on kickoff, and then Marvin Mims had an even better
Mims had a really good return. Yeah.
The only special teams negative was Michael Turk tonight.
He was not good.
22 yards.
I don't know what happened on that 22-yard punt. Now, I will say, he was going back into a really strong north wind.
That wind really picked up as the game went along.
It was very, like... When that cold front blew through, you could feel it. Like, it was like one of those, like, mm-hmm. where you're outside and you immediately
the flags
feel it.
Were pegged up in the north end zone.
Yeah. It was really windy. Like, there was a point where I was, like, kind of shaking, holding the camera a little bit.
As games go along, you know, running the Sooner Scoop Twitter account, it's pretty fascinating. And sometimes I have to stop checking the mentions because it was like after the first two offensive series, it was like, Lebby, I'm not sold on Lebby. He's not the answer. And then after three series, it was like, we need to look at somebody else besides Dylan Gabriel. And it's just
perfect.
It's a lot of complaining and whining and moaning. And it's like instantaneous feedback of people that just say awful things.
Sure.
I'm going to say this.
That's a coping mechanism.
Yeah, I'm going to say this.
You're mad.
Well, you're doing some therapy these days.
I do that. I do the same thing.
Yeah, but... I'm going to tell you, I draw the line at one criticism from tonight. The LED lights were fantastic.
Awesome.
I don't want to hear any bitching about it.
Absolutely.
I don't care if they give you a seizure, all right? You're just going to have to deal with it or not go to the games.
Well, I don't want you at the games if you're bitching about that kind of stuff. Truly. I've never, and again, this might be a little bit over the top, but... I don't know if I've ever been at a stadium at an OU game, at least in the last 5, 6, 7, 8 years, that had that type of atmosphere with mm-hmm. OU up by 30 points. And
well, in a game that had no atmosphere in the first half.
100%.
Absolutely none.
Like, there were points in the third quarter that I was like, it's loud.
Yeah.
It's loud in here. And
everybody stayed.
Yeah.
Credit to the students.
Now, it was nice out, beautiful night after that cold front.
It was almost chilly walking back to the car.
But there were like, I thought the crowd was great. I thought the in-game stuff with like the music. Mm-hmm. I know it's not exactly what people want, but they weren't playing, you know,
They were changing it up, yeah.
Yeah, like they've done a really good job.
I don't know if the Toby Keith song is going to become OU's Sweet Caroline or not.
Listen, there is only one Oklahoma breakdown. And
I know,
what
was that?
I love Toby.
So that was like a play, but did Mike Hostie write that song?
I think they said that they like co-sang it maybe, but...
That's not Oklahoma Breakdown.
If you're playing Oklahoma Breakdown, it either needs to be Hostie, Live from the Deli, or... The Stoney LaRue. I agree. Love you, Toby. I love you, but we can't be doing that.
I know.
There's only one Oklahoma breakdown.
I would rather have Hostie doing it.
I think that'd be sweet. A little Red Cup action.
Yeah.
It was good, though. I thought, like, for as much as we like to bitch about the in-game
they're trying.
Entertainment
and they're letting
and
Malcolm, I mean, they're letting Malcolm be more vocal, more involved.
Yeah, I think so.
I like that.
I think so. And
although, I got to say, I saw Malcolm throw out the gold Whataburger ball tonight. I hope he was screwing around with that being his throwing motion. It looked awful.
I'll talk to him about it at Christmas.
I love Malcolm, though. He's great.
No, he's awesome.
And he does a great job hyping. And that's the thing, like with the LED lights, it makes it more when he's on the mic and screaming. It doesn't seem as forced or hokey or whatever.
They're 100% trying to get people involved.
I would just say this. Can we please get Chris Plank some updated scores? Like,
oh, were they bad? I didn't even notice them.
That's a thing. I guess it doesn't matter because we're in the press box. We're keeping track of everything.
Yeah.
So he's always like a touchdown behind.
Oh, is he really?
Yeah.
That's funny.
And that's not on him. He's doing the broadcast. I mean, he's got all kinds of stuff going on, but
I thought it was
gotta
good,
be a
though.
System to make it the scores to him faster.
It was. I thought it was a really good atmosphere tonight, and
it was
for as how things started for it to get to where it did. Good stuff.
We just take everything and not rip it apart, but we analyze every little piece.
Yeah, I thought it was good. Like,
and we're not.
Listen, we can't sit here and bitch about the atmosphere, and then when they do try to make changes and they're trying to get people involved, yeah. they're listening to people's recommendations. You know, I saw that they like were asking people what music they want to hear. I know they're not gonna like sit there and play the songs that I think everybody in like my generation would want, but
like Mr. Brightside and you know.
Yeah, like but they are trying, and credit where you know credit is due. I thought the light stuff was, it's an investment that.
And by the way, good. You know, you hear LED lights. It was pretty clear to me from the press walk. They're brighter than the old lights.
Very much right.
Yeah.
Very much brighter.
And I mean, you're shooting down there. You would know.
For some reason, I feel like they were brighter in the north end zone.
Really?
Than they were in the south end zone. I don't know why. It just kind of felt like they were. I don't know. Maybe that was just like completely.
That could be because, I mean, the south end zone is more surrounded.
Yeah. I don't know. I thought it looked good, though. It looks really strong, and, you know, hopefully they get more...
Involved.
Involved, yeah.
Yeah, they'll figure it out. We talked to Joe afterwards, and he was like, look, it's just it's a first step. Like
There was a point like where they start blinking them for the first time. It's like, it kind of like shook me for a second because I wasn't ready for it.
Yeah, I mean, I was like, when it got dark, I was like, okay, are they going to do something with the lights? And then they kind of half did it one time. I was like, okay, they need to do better than that.
Yeah.
And then they got better as it went along. And then I will say this about people in Oklahoma. We love turning on the lights on our phone. That was pretty impressive.
It was pretty cool. I tweeted out a picture of it. It was almost like kind of impromptu. I don't know. Were they asking people to do that?
I think Malcolm said something like turn your lights on.
I completely missed that. But it was cool. Like I thought it was good. And, you know, the beat goes on. Now they're headed up to Lincoln this week, which...
It's Scott a little Frost. Disappointing because this, I mean, you scheduled these series so far out. I mean,
yeah, like
last year was the big 50th anniversary of the game of the century. And like, this is how it's going to end. Like,
well, and I'm going to spend all week talking about like, don't expect that Nebraska team that's gotten beat by Northwestern or Georgia State or Georgia Southern to show up. But at the end of the day, it kind of is what it is. They gave up the most yards in Memorial Stadium history today.
These are two teams going in different directions.
Nebraska was awful today. Nebraska is not a good football team.
No.
If this is an OU football team that, you know, people want to say is going to go be a Big 12 champ or, you know, get to a college football playoff or compete for a national title, you go up and win by a couple touchdowns. Bottom line.
I think Nebraska has reached that place with Scott Frost where like
you're hurting the program the longer
it's not salvageable. No. Yeah, like it's there's nothing that you can do. There's no amount of recruiting classes you can bring in here that's going to allow us to have a winning culture.
Well, and I mean, who's signing up for that? Like it's just so bad.
You're not
right
going to get great recruiting classes.
No, you're hurting the program. And let's be honest, if it wasn't because of dollar signs, Scott Frost would already be, he wouldn't even have started this year. He would have fired.
Well, you're saying his buyout is so large, they want to wait until it's more manageable for them to fire him.
I saw somebody tweet it during the game. It's like, they might as well just schedule the tweet for October 1st when the clock hits midnight, because that's when the buyout goes down and they can do it. And it just so happens to be coming off of a bye week for Nebraska.
Yeah, he's a dead man walking, basically.
Which I would think, and, you know, who knows if the Nebraska players even want to keep him around, but they're going to throw everything at Oklahoma next week.
Sure, yeah.
Everything. You got to be ready for everything.
There's probably nothing Scott Frost can do to save his job, but for he and his staff, guaranteed they think this is the only way they can save their job, is beating Oklahoma.
They must have just been awful today. 630-something yards to Georgia Southern. I know Clay Helton's a pretty good offensive coach, but... my God.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just, it's embarrassing. It's embarrassing even for Nebraska standards.
Let me ask you this. What did you think about the way that Jeff Lebby kind of handled things post-game?
Now, what did he, I was
okay,
over with
you were
players.
With players. Okay.
So what did Jeff say after the game? Because it seemed like he wasn't defensive by any
means.
No, there
was no panic, but, you know, he just admitted, like, you know, that wasn't very good and nobody was happy. And, you know, it basically that at halftime, they kind of had, you know, he was glad that they kind of listened to what he had to say, because it sounds like what he had to say wasn't very pleasant.
Well, it seemed like everybody, even in the stands, and they had to feel the same way heading into the locker room. You took a deep breath after, you know, you get the ball back. And I think John Shin asked Brent about this after the game. It's like they're taking timeouts there with the intention to get the ball back. And then they hit Mims, boom, boom, boom. And then all of a sudden it's like, well, I guess they maybe do have an opportunity to go score here.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't going to settle for a field goal.
Yeah. I mean, that was big. I mean, scoring before halftime, I think, gave them some confidence to check. But, I mean, really it comes down to...
From up top, are they just not getting any push? Like, offensive line-wise? Or they're missing blocks?
They're missing blocks. They're not getting any push. They're not... Like, today it was kind of a split level. I mean, they were playing three up front and then playing three or two linebackers behind them, or four. And it was like they had trouble getting to the second level. They had trouble reaching those linebackers. And the defensive linemen that they did have in their face, they were passing them off to other offensive linemen, and they weren't doing their job taking care of them. It was disjointed, discombobulated, whatever dish you want to throw in there.
Yeah.
It just didn't look good.
It's just ugly. It's ugly.
And then they finally started getting some plays on the ground, and it kind of snowballed a little bit. And Eric Gray started looking better. And Marcus Major started looking better.
They got to figure it out, man, because, I mean, I think you could...
I will say this. I mean, I watched closely that Nebraska-Northwestern game. Their defensive line is probably the weakest part of their roster. They're not good. And Northwestern pushed them around. I mean, that's my one thing. With this Oklahoma team, if they can't run the ball on Nebraska, they're going to have problems. I don't know how they're going to move the ball against Texas if they can't move it against Nebraska.
What about Kansas State? I mean,
their defensive line is unbelievable.
Kansas State will come
in. That's the best part of their team.
They'll come into Norman and do something that everybody has seen.
They'll shut down that offense.
Yeah, absolutely. And you can't just sit there and pick and pop over, you know, to Marvin Mims every time. I think Kansas State's a little bit more disciplined than Kent State.
Yeah.
So, I mean...
Well, they have enough players up front where they can just commit everybody to the back end.
I would make the argument that the next 4 weeks for Oklahoma... I mean, I know that's kind of a big sample size, but we're going to be sitting here in, you know, just over a month's time saying, this is what Oklahoma is. And the next four games at Nebraska, and then obviously Kansas State at home to open conference play, and then the two back-to-back DFW trips with TCU and Texas, you're going to have a pretty good idea of what this thing is.
I'm just glad Oklahoma's not playing Kansas in the next four games.
How about the Fighting Jayhawks today?
The Lance Leopolds.
Lance Leopold, not great for Neil Brown. Not great at all.
No. He dropped that game to Pitt that he shouldn't have dropped.
I haven't seen what the final number would be, but I would imagine that was Kansas's first road conference victory in 5 years, 6 years, 7 years. I mean, I'm talking thousands of days.
Yeah.
Right?
I think so.
Oh, no. I guess last year.
They won at Austin.
They won in Austin.
Okay.
I'm an idiot.
And they've won in Lawrence.
But still. I mean, fairly impressive. I saw somebody throw it out there. Can Kansas get to a bowl game? Let's pump the brakes on that. But it's pretty obvious that Lance Leopold's a pretty good football coach.
Yes.
I mean, to have Kansas playing like they're somewhat competent is a step in the right direction for that program.
Yeah, yeah. And, I mean, he had them playing well last year. They beat Texas. They were beating Oklahoma at halftime.
There's something special about a coach that can, you know, to a certain extent, get people's attention still when you're a bad football team. Or at least keep them bought in.
The only bad part about today is a certain team in Southern California looked pretty good.
I'm not ready to have that conversation. My buddy sent me a screenshot of a USC tweet or Instagram post after the game, and they were bragging on the quarterback having more touchdown throws than incompletions. Passes.
And I was just like, right, I just don't think I can do that right now. They do look pretty good, though. We'll see what they... Oregon State had a nice walk-off victory. We were watching the end of that before we started the
Baylor.
Podcast.
Oh, God, Baylor.
Baylor, I don't know what they're doing. I know that we were both just like, what the hell are they offensively trying to do? I ran it over 50 times tonight up in Provo.
The Big 12 might just be a shit show this year.
I think it's going to be. I thought Oklahoma State... I obviously didn't watch the game because it was at the same time, but...
I had it on my laptop.
34-17. Seems like they played pretty good against Arizona State. I don't think Arizona State's a very good football team, but you know, once conference play starts, this thing is about as wide open. You could make an argument to me that 3, 4, 5, maybe 6 teams could win this thing.
Yeah.
And I still think Baylor's a decent football team. I think BYU might not be bad at all. We'll see. You know, there's going to be a lot of buildup going into the game this next week up in Lincoln, and then the fun really begins. I think that you would hope that OU can take care of business up there, and then we'll see what they got. We'll see what they got because Kansas State's coming down, and that's going to be a really kind of nice test to see what that offensive line and defensive line look like.
Well, you will be there. Bob will be there, thanks to Eskridge Lexus. We're very proud to have them as our official travel partner.
100%.
And sponsor of Sooner Scoop post games, the Sooner Scoop post game pod, the Oklahoma Sooners post game pod.
There you go.
I understand we've had some issues with Apple where this week that should all be fixed. So I'm not going to Nebraska, so I will be working on that all week. But here's the thing with the Eskridge Lexus, you know, they've got the new NX out. If you've heard me talk before, I've got the IS F Sport, love it. Mine's the 2021, you know, performance package, limited slip diff, no big deal. It's not the 500, but I like mine better. But you know, they don't have a lot of cars right now. Their inventories are still pretty limited. They are improving, and they've got more new vehicles that are coming in every week. Now, since their car inventories have been so limited, they've been stocking up on Lexus L certified pre-owned vehicles, and all their Lexus L certified vehicles come with an unlimited mile full factory warranty with up to 6 years of coverage. L certified cars also come with 4 free services, free car washes, and use of brand new Lexus loaner vehicles while your car is in our service department. I'm taking mine in for service next week, and it's awesome to be able to, you know, just drive home a Lexus until yours is ready. And unlike other dealers, Eskridge Lexus never charges over MSRP, so they're not going to pop you for like a 5, 10, 20 grand extended charge because their cars are so hard to get. They never charge a dock fee. Or make you pay for accessories that you really didn't want. So visit EskridgeLexus.com for the most up-to-date inventories or to book your next service appointment. I've done it both of those through my Lexus app, the Lexus Inform app. It's fantastic. And, just give those guys a call. Go check them out, EskridgeLexus.com, and they'll put you in line for a brand-new Lexus or get you a really good L-certified Lexus.
I'm looking at Sean Callahan's grades for Nebraska today.
Mm-hmm.
Rushing offense, A. Passing offense, A. Rushing defense, F. Passing defense, F. Tell of two sides of the ball there. Georgia Southern had 233 rushing yards. What else? 642 total offense. Third most ever allowed by a Nebraska defense in school history.
Yeah. I mean, we've seen them play a little bit. I mean,
they're awful.
They don't have good running backs.
It sounds like it was the same thing as the Northwestern game,
too. We know what Casey Thompson is about.
They just look like they're just
incapable of stopping anybody.
And almost they're playing like on a beach or something. They can't move.
Yeah.
Which you would think that Oklahoma would, maybe this is the type of game that Eric Gray would really excel.
They
get them out in space.
They seem kind of like a team that recruited really big players at positions like linebacker and safety because they play in the Big Ten, but that's also their biggest detriment is those guys are slow.
Yeah. No, they're just playing in quicksand.
should be an interesting trip. It's been a while since I've been there. I'll say this. This has got to be the most down Nebraska football has been since Bob Devaney days.
Yeah, I mean, they're ready to fire
their
coach.
This is one of the worst eras in Nebraska football history.
And hand up, I mean, I thought it was going to be different. I really did.
Like, I
thought,
I mean, we were going there in the Bill Callahan era, which it wasn't great, but it wasn't like this. No. I mean, you were still not far removed from the Tom Osborne, Frank Solich eras. Yeah.
Well, I just like
they felt like they really weren't that far away. Nebraska fans now have to feel like they may never see a championship again in football.
Well, I you know, Brent talked about it after the game, just as far as
idolizing
Nebraska growing up. Like I think that, you know, there's a lot of people out there that Nebraska football there in the late 80s, you know, and then obviously the early 90s, that was it. That's what everybody aspired to be.
And it's not even like Penn State bad.
No, they're just...
like, it's even way more hopeless than that. But Penn State's not very hopeful.
It's kind of like we talked about with Callahan. What was it? When we did the 101 podcast before the game last year.
Mm-hmm.
You and I did. It just is like, it seems like it's a fan base that...
I fucking fly.
It's just all up in my shit. God,
it's like a baby fly that's so annoying and like hyper.
Either that or there's a million of them in here.
I think it might have gotten your beer.
He can have it. It just seems like they're still trying to do the same things that they did in the mid-90s, and I know that's not accurate, but from the outside looking in, Nebraska, it seems like, is always trying to chase what they had as opposed to creating something that they can have. I don't know.
There's no reinvention in their minds. It's all...
And it's just like they want to be the black shirts. They want to be this team in the 90s or the early 2000s that was dominant, and they haven't looked themselves in the mirror almost. I thought Scott Frost was going to be really good. Or at least competent enough to not be fired maybe five games into the season.
He was a good coach at UCF.
I don't know, man. It's just
it makes you wonder if it's not just the program, not just the...
Are there bigger problems than just coaching?
Yeah, like is it a systemic thing?
Yeah, and it very well could be. I don't know. I mean, we basically wrote the eulogy for Nebraska football, and they're going to play out of their minds next week.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think Oklahoma's used to that. They get their best shot from everybody,
and that's what Brent was saying today.
Like, yeah. Oh, I think that it's super fascinating, and we're going to talk to the players on Monday and Tuesday this week, just kind of like how much Brent feeds in to this idea. Like, I would think that Brent, from a motivation standpoint, I guess I'd put it this way. I'd be very, very shocked if this team's not ready to play on Saturday.
Yeah.
You know, it just seems like this, like the mindset and everything that's going to go into this game and the first road trip, it seems like something that Brent, as a head coach, would really excel at.
Well, and it's interesting, too, because this really is their first biggest disappointment of the season. Everything's been pretty smooth. Like,
sure.
Game number one, it was like nobody knew what was going to happen. It was like, okay, we got... Brent didn't even know how to be a head coach. Like, okay, we got through that. It wasn't perfect. We didn't expect it to be perfect, but here's all the stuff we have to get better at. Now it's like, okay, well, we just tried to tell you guys that we needed to get better, and we got worse in the first half.
Well, the one thing that I did appreciate was they didn't run away from the fact that they were shit in the first half.
Yeah.
They accepted it, said, was some adversity.
We're close.
Yeah, like, and as you were saying that, it kind of just dawned on me that, like, they definitely owned it. They're like, yeah. It wasn't good. We know it wasn't good. It wasn't a...
There's a difference
You guys don't understand.
Yeah.
You know, that type of thing.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's a difference in saying we're close. I don't know, maybe there is, and we're not that far away. Because, like, we're not that far away at least admits you're not where you want to be.
Sure.
When you say we're close, it's like, it's almost like saying you don't see it, but we do.
Right. And, you know, I guess to a certain extent.
Like, no, we all see what we see.
I appreciated that they at least stood up there and kind of owned it. And said, yeah, it wasn't good enough.
From the coaches to the player, Dylan Gabriel owned it.
Sure.
I'm sure Marvin Mims owned it over on the side.
No, he did. He did, 100%. But I also think that there's like the sense of they knew that it was there. I just don't know where it was. And I think that's why the offensive line stuff is, you walk out of there, it is worrisome how they're playing right now.
Yeah, they got to be better, no doubt. All right, it is about 2:30 on Sunday morning. I think we both want to get up and watch Baker in the morning.
I think we started this thing, and I was looking over at you as we were like getting ready to start, and it's like, we're both kind of cooked right now. Mm-hmm. Like, our brains are just not really working. So I don't even know what we really just said. Did you see the guy at the LSU game tonight?
Yes. That just walked on the field? I only saw a little bit of it.
I mean, he had to be on drugs.
The play was happening as he was, why nobody noticed him.
It's the most LSU thing. They just let him walk out.
Because I think it was like yellow and he just blended in with the end zone or the field or something.
So bizarre. So bizarre.
And did the play ever reach him?
No, they like ran the other side.
Okay.
It would have been like he was in the south end zone. The play was going towards the north end zone. Okay. You know, vice versa, okay. Whatever. It was just.
I'm going to have to go back and catch that. Yeah.
Just completely bizarre. Good second week.
I think it's
just
a night game. I think we feel like maybe we did some shrooms or something with those lights tonight.
Yeah, we microdosed through the whole game.
Is that going to become the next thing? Is like people are going to want to get edibles like for night games? For
I don't
the
know
light show.
But if anybody wants to, we should give them a GoPro. That could be the next Scoop HD.
That
feature.
Could be the next double rainbow.
That'd be awesome. It was cool, though. It was a very enjoyable second week of college football.
Yes, it was
college
great.
Football delivered again today. And
I didn't even mind that we had to work tonight. I mean, we got to see Alabama and Texas, and that's as good as it usually gets on a Saturday.
It was a great game.
All right. Thanks so much for listening to the Eskridge Lexus postgame show. We'll be back again next week with the guys on the road. Thanks to Eskridge Lexus for being our official travel partner. And we will see you guys back here for another episode of the Oklahoma Sooners postgame podcast on Soonerscoop.com.